les performances de
Jonathan Emile.
Show it.
Maritza.
Remy Picasso.
Paul Carniello.
DJ Lady Oracle.
Collect de fonds pour Résilience Montréal.
Raising money for Resilience Montreal.
Tout le monde et tous les âges sont bienvenus.
Everybody is welcome.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. From drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on Thursday, September 1st, 2022. It's the first day of a new month, and the fall theater season is here, or as we say en français, la rentrée culturelle. The Siegel Center just unveiled their fall season in the past hour, and we'll have more details about that and the upcoming Centaur season in other companies soon. In the meantime, I've got conversations tonight with three upcoming shows in the next week, all adaptations with brave new looks, as well as the Year of the Playwright. So, on tonight's show, my guests. The world of wrestling meets the stage at a festival called Royal Mania this month at Théâtre aux Écuries. Elizabeth Coulon-Lafleur directs an adaptation of Shakespeare's Richard III. She discovered the magic of wrestling through an old flame.
It's theater, you know, it's art vivant, like it's so much fun, so much liberty around wrestling that sometimes we don't have in theater as well. And just like being crazy and going all over the place. But I mean, it's different. Lots of fun.
And Sophia Blondin co-directs an adaptation of the story of the Greek king Agamemnon, reinvented as a wrestling star set to hang up his hat.
As a kid, I would like randomly zap and watch a wrestling program and have a lot of fun. And then Hulk Hogan was having his reality TV show at the same time. That's my generation. And, you know, it was so interesting to just see these characters, these people being so like supernatural in a way.
Director Roxane Lumet adapts Jean Genet's Les Bonnes, a play about two maids and their mistress. And she explains why she feels called to update this play.
I thought about the work and the work of maids and what it was in Montreal in the 40s. And it actually made me think that my great-grandmother was actually a maid for a house in Westmount. And she was a Francophone working in a house in Westmount for this very rich man. And I remember my grandmother talking about it, and it was a complicated relationship.
And it's the Year of the Playwright. I'll speak with Mindy Doherty Griffiths of the Playwrights Guild of Canada about their programming to celebrate 50 years of being in business.
To honor all of the playwrights across Canada and all of the incredible work that they do, the wonderful, diverse, rich stories that they tell from coast to coast to coast. And so we thought, let's have a big celebration.
Highbrow and lowbrow will collide at Théâtre aux Écuries this fall with the launch of Royal Mania Festival de Lutte Théâtre, Wrestling Meets Classical Theatre. Some might look down their noses at wrestling, but the themes of good versus evil and the ongoing battle between heels and faces, the outlandish storylines, the excellent costuming, it's actually quite a theatrical art. Royal Mania starts Tuesday, September 6th, and it's the opening season event au Théâtre aux Écuries, which is located near Fabre Metro. There are two epic stories being reinterpreted through the lens of the wrestling ring. Firstly, we have Agamemnon in the Ring, a collaboration with Création Ounouknou. Agamemnon is the Greek hero, king of the Mycenae, and commander of the Greeks. His name means very steadfast and resolute. He gathers the Greek army to lay siege to Troy in order to rescue his brother Menelaus' bride, Helen. In the play, Agamemnon is set to announce his retirement and enter the Hall of Fame of wrestling, but two young squabbling wrestlers throw his legacy into jeopardy. Sophia Blondin is co-directing this operatic rock tale with author Hilaire Saint-Laurent, who is a big wrestling fan, and there's 8 original rock opera anthems written by artist Fred Tremblay. The second play we'll discuss is Dick the Turd. You guessed it. This is a riff on Shakespeare's Richard III, the humpbacked king who seizes power, if only for a short while. Still the second longest play in the Bard's canon. This is the one with the famous line, "Now is the winter of our discontent." Dick the Turd is transposed to a wrestling competition in contemporary Montreal. This is a collaboration with the Theatre and Les Impairs and Le Collectif Moutarde Forte. As you will hear, director Elisabeth Coulon-Lafleur was introduced to the magic of wrestling by an old flame, but she still remains captivated by the form. Royal Mania rolls out this Tuesday and lasts for 3 weeks, pairing these two shows with a varied assortment of programming, including hot dog dinners and a video game tournament, just to name a few things. I spoke with directors Sophia and Elisabeth yesterday. Welcome, Sophia and Elisabeth, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Thank you very much.
So I know one person here is a diehard wrestling fan. For the other person, this is a bit of a new thing. Elisabeth, tell me, have you always been super into wrestling?
No, I haven't. Actually, when I was younger, there was this whole craze about wrestling and I couldn't understand it. And it was pretty weird for me. And at some point, I had a boyfriend that introduced me to a couple of years ago, and he was so passionate. And I got the chance to have this whole personal introduction about wrestling, which is kind of necessary if you want to really dive in pretty quickly and understand the whole thing, because it's quite complicated and many ramifications, if I can say. So yeah, he introduced me, and I just fell in love. It's theater, you know. It's art vivant. It's so much fun, so much liberty around wrestling that sometimes we don't have in theater as well. And just being crazy and going all over the place. And but I mean, it's different. But yeah, anyways, lots of fun. I'm not following so much these days because we're not together, and it was the whole thing. But I keep having so much fun going to galas and in Montreal. I'm a huge fan of live wrestling. Actually, I love to go into galas and being there and screaming out at the top of my lungs and just going crazy with the crowd. It's so much fun, and I'm a really huge fan of going live.
So it sounds like this is something you appreciated more as an adult. Which is interesting. Yes. Now, for you, Sophia, this wrestling is something you watched as a kid. How do you feel about it today?
I feel it's, like Elisabeth, it's so much fun. And yes, as a kid, I would randomly zap and watch a wrestling program and have a lot of fun. And then Hulk Hogan was having his reality TV show at the same time. That's my generation. And, you know, it was so interesting to just see these characters, these people being so supernatural in a way. And now that I've been learning more and seeing more, I went to a live wrestling event, which was great. It was at the Diamant in Quebec, which is a new theater. And the NSWP had a huge event. The place was full. There were not even one space left to seat. It was really... it's this very crazy sensation of living a moment with hundreds of other people. And it's very powerful and meaningful also. It can be meaningful. Some people can find that, oh, it's only people, hurting each other. But it's not true. You know, in wrestling, you have the good and the bad, and who will win, the good or the bad? And that's, the wrestle that we do each day, what will win? Well, the good powers come through, or the bad ones. So it's touching something that is universal, even though the form might be freely violent, and there's something that is very interesting and powerful beneath it.
That is the voice of Sophia Blondet. And I'm just thinking back to something you said earlier, Elisabeth, about being in the crowd and cheering someone on and being really passionate and super into it. since we're both revisiting Shakespearean stories, as well as, I guess, like Greek myth, do you find that there's a touchstone, like a connection between wrestling today and the kind of passion it displays people put on both in the ring and outside as audience members, and what drama used to be like when in Shakespeare's time, or when we go back to Greek theater? Who would like to, that question goes to both of you. Who would like to tackle that first?
So basically, when I've been taught Greek tragedy, it was described as this festival that was called Les Dionysi, so in honor of this god that is called Dionysos. And he's the god of wine, he's the god of ritual, of culture, of like, you know, something that's happening in front of the fire, a dance, something, music, everything that's artsy. And these festivals were described really as a huge, I would say, like as a huge spring break. It was really like people were partying, people were almost like drunk all along, or drinking, or really like there was something that was deeply connected to having fun and you know, living the everyday life through art. And also the story that were put up by the dramaturg at the time were stories about kings, about, you know, people that were from a great family, these like selected, the ones, you know, these people that we all look up to. And I was remembering a conversation with my theater teacher and saying, so this was basically like People magazine, like you're watching Kim Kardashian divorcing from Kanye and you're screaming at Kim Kardashian. Like this was like, I know I'm maybe like, I'm kind of like removing the, you know, the aura, the intellectual aura around it. But, you know, at the time, half people were not able to read or write, you know, like even more than that. So for me, what was very powerful with this project my friend Hilaire has proposed to me is that we were able to find a way through wrestling to tell again these stories of these great kings and the princesses and generals of the army that go to Troy to, you know, bring back Helen, but with this touch that really facilitates this engagement and that brings the heroes closer to us, just like Justin Bieber can be when we talk about his wedding or anything. So it's really People's Magazine, Les Dionysi, and then like wrestling being the channel to liberate the simplicity of it, actually.
The larger than life figures that help us process what we're through, let us process our own lives. Sophia, you mentioned your piece, Agamemnon. We're going to come back to what the actual stories are in a moment, but I wanted to turn to Elizabeth and just let you also set up that link between people sitting in stadiums in ancient Greece and people coming to Théâtre aux Écuries to cheer on, you know, Richard III in your piece.
I mean, Sophia just answered so well, but for us, it's pretty much, it's close to what she said, like Shakespeare theater was such a popular art form, and people would like just go to see theater as a hobby, you know, as something you would do to spend your Sunday afternoon, you know, and nowadays it's less, people are less going to theater as some hobby or just to like being interested, you know, because it's changed, but so yeah, it's a way for us to reconnect with, we hope to reconnect with the people. I'm losing my English right now, but yeah, for me it's this side of like popularity art form that linked that channel we can get with the public that come to see us, and that used to like really be a part of the show, you know. They used to like, we have this image of like the tomatoes being thrown on the stage, and it's about the same with wrestling. People would throw things, maybe less tomatoes, maybe more bras or something else, but there's this participation that is so important and catharsis through
cathartic.
That is cathartic, yeah, which is very important for us and helps us to like connect with Shakespeare as well through wrestling, actually. And the fact that we're working on Trifrontal, which is like the three sides which is the same as the globe. So we're like, I feel like all the wrestling elements are like concording with Shakespeare, and that we're like channeling just Shakespeare's soul through Dig the Turd. We hope that's what we're trying to do.
It's truly theater in the round. That's a really excellent point to make. That is the voice of Elizabeth Coulon-Lafleur, who is directing Dick the Turd as part of Théâtre aux Écuries Royal Mania, which starts in just a couple of days, September the 6th, running until the 24th of September. So we touch on Shakespeare with Elizabeth. Sophia, I want to turn back to ancient Greece, Agamemnon in the ring. Here we have this big king, this epic guy that anyone would remember if you read about the Trojan Wars. And here he is still a king, but he's the king of the ring. He's a big wrestler and he's announcing his retirement. Is that right? Tell me more
exactly
about the story.
Yes. So basically what we've been trying to do is to really pick up all the main events that happened. So basically, as many of you might know, the Troy War all started with the robbing of a woman. So her name was Helen, and she was robbed from the place that she came from, which was Greece, and brought into Troy. And then from that, but she was married to Menelaus, a Greek man, who was like, my wife just got robbed and kidnapped, and we have to go there. And he convinced his brother Agamemnon, who was like this very powerful king, to set it up and just go. So basically that's our starting point. So instead of robbing a woman, we're talking of course about the word is incisor. How do we say that in English? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like the belt that a wrestling champ wears.
Exactly. So we're celebrating Agamemnon's retirement. He's done a great job. He's won, you know, so many belts and so many trophies. But then, surprise, two villains from Troy come and rob this belt. So this is the starting point for our universe. I could, of course, like go step by step in the story. It could be long, but I could say quickly that from that point, we need to prepare to go to war. So will Agamemnon decide to actually go? And then he must do sacrifices to do it. So will he take that sacrifice? He needs to sacrifice his daughter in order to come back on the ring. Will he do that or not? And then we have, of course, the war itself, which is a very huge choreographed combat, which I'm very excited about. And in the end, he comes back to Greece where his wife waits for him, but she is pretty mad because, you know, it's good that you've won this this war, but our daughter is no longer among us because of you. So, you know, basically we're kind of transposing the main events of this Iliad and Odyssey, the return, into this one-day gala that that is full of rebondissement.
Lots of action. It gets telescoped into like a we've got 10 years worth of action into one day.
That's exactly what we're proposing, actually.
That is Sophia Blondin, who is the co-director of Agamemnon, the adaptation for Royal Mania at Théâtre aux Écuries, Agamemnon in the Ring, to be precise, which is about the Greek stories. Then we turn to Shakespearean England. We have Dick the Turd, so a riff on Richard III, one of Shakespeare's great villains, and maybe also a sympathetic villain to some. So Elizabeth, you are the director of this play. Tell me how you adapt Shakespeare to the wrestling ring.
Yeah, that was actually lots of fun. We collectively rewrote the play, actually. So we started by like having these two boards with like all the monarchy from the time from Chartres, and this board with all the like the hierarchy from WWE, and we managed to like make all these links and to like kind of understand like, okay, so who would be like Vince McMahon, or like who would be like that like the Queen of England, you know, who would be like Edward the Fourth, or so, you know, like we try to like compose with these two boards and connect them together. And then we kind of rewrote like scene by scene with while taking some scenes out so we could go to the essential. And at the same time, we took some liberties. So we kind of like were very, very like literal, like literal with some scenes, and some others we just like went free and we decided like Buckingham is not supposed to be like from the first scene in the original, but Buckingham is with us since the beginning. He's the buck and he's very exciting, very cool, so very animal. So yeah, that's what we did.
That is Elizabeth Coulon-Loeffler talking about the Dick the Turd adaptation of Richard III, part of Royal Mania. So one thing that I'm just thinking about is I've seen a couple of images of both of these shows, and you have everybody dressed in like real wrestling regalia. So if you're wondering, like, will it look like a professional wrestling? It will. You're really bringing all the elements in. So visually that goes along with the stories that you're both telling here. I'm wondering for you personally, what this means for you as a theater artist, this chance to kind of dip your toe or really get immersed into a different form of storytelling. And does that change how you do storytelling moving forward? Sophia, how about you?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting question. I feel very privileged to be part of this project, basically because it's always a great experience to reflect and have this perspective on these Greek myths, but that can be very, very close to us. So it's really a great lesson about accessibility, actually, and making theater fun. Our play, the Hilaire Saint-Laurent, the author of the text, has written something very funny, very irreverent. I don't know if that's a word in English, but he's written something that is just very fun and accessible, and but we're still talking about these Greek myths. So of course, wrestling has a huge role in that to make it accessible. But I think that in future projects, if I do have the chance to think about a story that has already been told, but to bring it and offer it to the people who come to see the show in a way that is surprising, light, fun, and at the same time you like live things, you're going through the whole thing, and sometimes you're scared, sometimes you're a bit sad for the character. Yeah, that's for me is a great game changer on that level.
Elizabeth, what about you? How does this change you as an artist?
It resonates for me, like the whole the fun part is very important. We as well, like we had so much fun with the form, and we managed to do something very funny. I feel like people are gonna find it. Well, actually we presented at the Zoo Fest in 2019, and people had a good laugh, so that's good. And yeah, it's about the fun with the people. It's about like breaking down this seriousness sometimes of theater, which like the intellectuality as well. Like sometimes we get into theater and it's like, okay, we have to make sense of it. We're making sense of everything, of course, but with so much fun and so much pleasure, and like éclater la forme, you know, like breaking the theater codes and breaking the form, so we can just like really get together into this show and propose something completely different and completely exciting.
The inspiration is rolling off the both of you so completely, and I'm so excited to actually see the show. Sophia and Elizabeth, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about Agamemnon in the Ring, as well as Dick the Turd. Can't wait for this to start in just a couple of days.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you and hearing Elizabeth too. And I can't wait to see your show as well, Elizabeth.
Oh yeah, I can't wait to see yours. A couple of days, and it's gonna be it.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having us. It's a blast, and we're having so much fun with the festival.
That was Sophia Blondet and Elisabeth Coulon-Lafleur. Sophia is co-directing Agamemnon in the Ring with Hilaire Saint-Laurent, who wrote the show. Elisabeth is directing Dick the Turd, an adaptation of Richard III. The performances are part of Royal Mania programming, bringing together wrestling and traditional theater. They launched this Tuesday, September the 6th, and continue until the 24th. This is all going down at Théâtre aux Écuries, which is going to have a kind of wrestling ring vibe for the next couple of weeks. There is accompanying programming like hot dog dinners, roundtables, readings, open rehearsals, as well as a video game tournament. You can get tickets for both shows, along with two hot dogs for $50. Théâtre aux Écuries is at 7285 Chabot near Fabre Metro. For tickets and more information, visit auxecuries.com. auxecuries.com. I'm Sarah Day, and you are listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come this hour, the Playwrights Guild of Canada is marking 50 years of supporting writers, and they've decided this is the year of the playwright. In Projet Les Bonnes, Solange and Claire are two sisters toiling as domestic workers for a wealthy woman living in Westmount, known only to us as Madame. A bonne, in French, is a maid. And when Claire and Solange are alone, they concoct a sneaky little game, role-playing Madame's murder. They put on her clothes, they play with her stuff, until a slip-up threatens to reveal their secret little ploy. The interplay between a boss and their staff, the balance of power and class, has long been of interest to artists and writers. The show we are discussing tonight, Projet Les Bonnes, is an imaginative, trilingual, interdisciplinary adaptation of Jean Genet's play Les Bonnes, using French, English, and Spanish. Genet was a French writer. Les Bonnes was first performed in France in 1947, 14 years after the brutal murder of a family in Mans, for which two French sisters, their servants, stood trial. Though Genet denied there was a connection between the actual events and what happened in Les Bonnes. Back to present day, the woman behind the adaptation we are discussing is artist Roxane Lumed, a Montrealer who graduated from theater performance at Concordia and founded the collective Third Space Theater after graduation. In addition to delving into documentary shorts and music videos, she writes, directs, and produces. When Roxane started working on Genet's original piece, Roxane also learned that the story is closer to her life than she originally thought. Turns out her own great-grandmother worked as a domestic worker for a wealthy Westmount family back in the day. You'll hear more about that connection in a moment, as well as her reflections on it. Projet Les Bonnes arrives at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine this coming Tuesday and runs until the 9th of September. I caught up with Roxane between rehearsals at La Chapelle yesterday. Roxane, welcome to Upstage. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You must be full of excitement. We're just days away from the opening of Les Bonnes.
That's right. Yeah, very exciting. We're in a tech week right now. We're doing a residency before we open. So we've been in the venue since Tuesday, yesterday, and working hard, but all very excited. Yeah.
I'm curious to know about your inspiration for the show. I know it is an adaptation from an earlier play, but the concept of servants who plot against their mistress or their master is a theme that's been touched on in different works of art, whether it's been visual art like a painting or in Jean Genet's play in the past. So tell me how you came to engage with this material.
I guess I started working on Genet back when I was in school at Concordia for my undergrad in performance. And we touched it very lightly, and just I was very curious about the way he wrote and the dynamic of the characters. And I knew I wanted to get back to it, but I didn't know then how deep and how full of possibilities this text could give me. But I, by coincidence, came back to it in 2018 when I wanted to start producing my own work. I read the play and it really got me thinking about why do a play like this here today in Montreal? And I thought about the work and the work of maids and what it was in Montreal in the 40s. And it actually made me think that my great-grandmother was actually a maid for a house in Westmount. And she was a Francophone working in a house in Westmount for this very rich man. And I remember my grandmother talking about it, and it was a complicated relationship because they became very close, and he was offering to pay for school for her kids, and it was a very ambiguous relationship, and that made me very interested in that dynamic and what it represents. And then when I think about adapting a piece, I need to think about how it's related to today. And I thought about who are doing this work here today in Montreal and in Quebec. And it's not the same as in the 40s. Like, now Francophones are the, you know, I don't want to say not every Francophone in the city, but we're not the lower class anymore. And the people that are doing these jobs are most often women from South America or the Philippines. And then workshopping it and working with it for years, I decided to implement Spanish in the piece, because also one of my actors who was doing one of the main characters is half Argentinian. And it's with her that we get to the Spanish in the piece as the piece progresses. So we go from French English in the first half, and then it switches to French Spanish in the second act. Yeah.
And do you feel like adding in the Spanish, it adds to the authenticity of it, because you're kind of representing a bit more of, you know, what it is today to have, as you're mentioning, a lot of people who are domestic workers are coming from South America or the mm-hmm. Philippines, where Spanish actually has roots there as well.
Yeah. It makes it more real. It makes it contemporain.
More contemporary. Yeah.
Yeah. Brings it. Yeah, it modernizes it.
Modernizes it.
Yeah.
Which is also interesting, because you've made a choice to time travel in the play, because we go back to the times of the Great Depression, and we're also in contemporary Montreal as well.
Yeah, it's a mixed. And I think it's with language that dramaturgically I'm exposing that shift in time. It's like because the two maids that are two sisters are role-playing the madame, and playing in her bedroom. So one of the maid will pretend to be the madame, and the other one will be themselves as the maid.
Yeah, let's find out more about the story. That is the voice of Roxane Lumet, who is the director, the creator of Les Bonnes, coming to La Chapelle Sainte Contemporaine. It is a trilingual play, as we've been discussing, and there are super titles on certain presentations in case you're not as familiar with English, French, or Spanish. So we meet two women, Solange and Claire. Why was it important to have two female characters in the role of the domestic workers?
It was written that way originally, and I think the people that did those work back then were women, and domestic work is something that women have been doing forever and has not been valued enough. And whether you are someone who does that for a living or just doing it for your family, it's sometimes not really valued at all. So I think for me, having women playing those roles was very important. Yeah.
So tell me about Solange and Claire's working situation, because it causes them to, leads them to play this kind of macabre game when they're alone.
Well, the story is that they are serving this woman that they name and call Madame. And when Madame is away, both of them decide to play in her bedroom, play dress up, and pretend to be her. And the game that they want to do, both fictional and in real life in the play, is to kill her. They're planning to kill her. They're planning their murder because they want to escape. They want to be free of this person. So to be able to do the murder right, they have to practice it. And that's what they do each night when the woman is away. But each night that they practice, they can never do the murder. They can never go to the end of the game. Why? Because in a way, they're not sure that that's really what they want to do. Because if they don't serve her, if they're not maids anymore, then there's the question of who are they and who are they going to become. And I think it's a that's a big piece of it, the unknown. And also there's a very unique and strange and toxic relationship between them. They, as much as they hate her and they want to get rid of her, it's the only person that they know as family. They feel very close to her. She feels really close to them. They're very lonely in this rich house, and they have one another. And the madame can really do whatever she wants with them. She can have them as friends if she feels like it sometimes, and have them as servants and slaves even when she decides to. So it's a big, big, big weird power dynamic of who dominates who, and yeah, love and hate relationship.
The power imbalance is quite fascinating, and it's present in just about any relationship where someone is subservient or caring for someone else. Exactly. That must have been fascinating for you to explore.
Oh yeah, I think that was the meat of it, and what made me want to like dig into the piece even more, and play with the actors on that, and like when does one character gain power over the other, and how and why, and it always shifts and switch like in real life with all our relationships.
I'm also thinking about the things that we say when no one else is around, because I think that there is a kind of code switching, or perhaps, I'm not sure if that would be the right term, but you know, if you're at work and you're not happy with the boss, and you might say to someone else, you might vent and in a moment of anger say something really aggressive, but it's something you would never carry out, something you would never do, but you need to get it off your chest. Or complaining about a spouse or a child in a way that would shock someone who had never heard you before. Did that interest you as well as a director, exploring kind of like this game that sounds?
And the thing is that they never feel like they are completely alone. They always feel like they're being spy on, that the room is even going to like tell on them, that they're going to leave trace of the game and they're going to get discovered. And so, yes, they allow themselves to vent and be honest about what's happening, but then they, you know, they have to take it back, and they have to make sure that they can never be seen or heard saying these things. So they're always on their toes, and they're always afraid to be discovered. And then when Madame comes in, you see a complete shift of how they behave with her compared to when they're alone in the room. And that was really fun to play with, for sure. And very relatable.
That is the voice of Roxane Lumet, who is the director of Les Bonnes, coming to La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine, a trilingual play. What advice, what direction did you give to the two performers playing the roles of the domestic workers, Solange and Claire?
What advice I would give them right now?
Or what guidance were you giving them as a director for inhabiting these two roles?
Oh, it's been so... We've been working together, the four of us, so since 2018. And we've learned this text throughout the years and discovered it together. And each discovery brings us to new images, new emotions, new scenes, new... And we know it so well now that all I say to them right now is just trust the process and have fun, and really play together and tell the story of these women that are very, like, very sad and very tragic, and that also tells a lot about society and social class and injustice and power. And it's even though it's a big play and it has all these crazy moments, it talks about a real human situations and our reality of day to day, and how to find our place and who we are in this world where we need to survive and make money. I don't know.
Will you be thinking about your great-grandmother on opening night next week?
Oh, for sure, yes. I never met her, but I remember my grandmother telling me these stories, and my father telling me about it when he found out I was working on this piece. And he's like, did you remember that you had a great-grandparent who did that kind of job and that kind of work? And for sure, yeah. I wonder what they would think about it now.
Before I let you go, I just wanted to ask about a piece of work of yours that is separate from Les Bonnes, but was presented recently at the Jamais Lu Festival, which uncovers work that have yet to be produced, so Jamais Lu. It was inspired by the life of Ensaf Haidar, who is well-known as a woman who lives in Sherbrooke, and her husband has been imprisoned in Saudi Arabia as a blogger, basically cracked down for his writings, sent to jail for years and years. And she's built a new life in Quebec and is quite an interesting voice on freedom of expression. So Ensaf is the play. Will it be produced at some point?
I hope so. I really do. We had a beautiful reading at the Jamais Lu Festival, and it was a great way to present the text for the first time to an audience and to her, because she came and heard what I wrote about her for the first time since I've met her in 2017. And that was such a beautiful moment. And I think it went well. And I think this show should happen. Hopefully it will happen soon, because the situation at that family is happening today. Haif just finished 10 years of prison, but he's still not allowed to be reunited with his family. So he's still in Saudi, and he needs to stay there for another 10 years before he's allowed to come back or to come and be with his family. So I think it is work that is important to be told, and it's important to share awareness about. And I hope that we can, for me, it's a small little contribution to their fight and spread the word about what's happening.
So that is your theatrical work, Ensaf, which we'll hopefully see at some point on stage. But in the meantime, we can get our Roxane Lumet fix with Les Bonnes coming to La Chapelle Saint Contemporain next week. Thank you so much, Roxane, for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
That was director Roxane Lumet. Her play, Project Les Bonnes, is a trilingual adaptation of Jean Genet's 1947 play, Les Bonnes. It will be presented at La Chapelle Saint-Contemporain September 6th to the 10th at 7:30, with French surtitles on the 8th and the 10th, and English surtitles on September the 9th. The performers are Marie-Ève Bérubé, Camila Forteza, and Alexandra Petra-Chuk. For tickets and more information, visit lachapelle.org. You can call 514-843-7738 or email bietri@lachapelle.org. Roxane's theater collective is called Troisième Espace Theater, Third Space Theater. I'm Sarah De A, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. In just a moment, we'll go behind the scenes at the Playwrights Guild of Canada.
Union United Church, Cinema Politica, and Catbird Productions are proud to invite you to a special community screening of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardon. This special event will take place in Little Burgundy's historic Union United Church on Thursday, September 1st at 7 p.m., and the screening will be followed by a discussion with the director and participants from the film. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. Make sure not to miss this special event. Admission is on a first-come, first-served basis, and a minimum donation of $5 for the church is highly recommended. This event is sponsored by Caisse des Jardins du Sud-Ouest de Montréal and the Sud-Ouest Borough of Montreal. For more information, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Montrealers were so proud it happened in their city.
Welcome back to Upstage. The Playwrights Guild of Canada is marking a half century of supporting local writing talent, a year-long celebration of artists dubbed the Year of the Playwright. The Guild is a registered arts service association based in Toronto that advances the creativity and interests of professional playwrights and to promote Canadian plays on the national and international stage while also creating a supportive community. Nancy Morgan is executive director of the Guild, and she is quoted as saying, bringing the stories of individual playwrights from coast to coast to coast, enrich our stages, and contribute to an ever-changing cultural landscape from a variety of communities in this country. The year's activities include a reading series as well as something called the Canadian Play Outlet. I reached out to Mindy Doherty Griffiths to find out more about the Year of the Playwright. She is Public Relations Manager at the Playwrights Guild of Canada. I reached Mindy in Toronto earlier in August. Welcome, Mindy, to Upstage. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. We're so pleased to be here talking with you today.
The Year of the Playwright. So this is coined in time for the special 50th anniversary of the Playwrights Guild. Am I getting that right?
That is correct. So Playwrights Guild of Canada began in 1972. So we are celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. And we thought, what a wonderful way to celebrate, to coin this year, the Year of the Playwright, and to honor all of the playwrights across Canada and all of the incredible work that they do, the wonderful, diverse, rich stories that they tell from coast to coast to coast. And so we thought, let's have a big celebration.
Tell me what the Playwrights Guild does. How do you support playwrights or would-be playwrights, which I'm sure there are a lot of?
So Playwrights Guild of Canada, we have over 850 members across Canada. We have many services we support in many ways, from contract negotiations with professional theaters, as well as amateur, you know, rights and licensing. We do a whole bunch of skill building with professional development workshops. We have creator exchanges. We have reading programs through our Play Connect program, which is funded by the Canada Council. And we have different series, webinar series. We just finished up our Craft Bites program, where we take two playwrights from across the country who don't know each other and pair them for readings of the work and then a discussion about the craft. And we, you know, continue to support our members by promoting their work across Canada and internationally. And we also have the Canadian Play Outlet, where we have over 2,500 digital scripts of our members. We have published work. It's a really beautiful, beautiful online store that all of our members have contributed their work to, which you can go online and purchase from your own home. You don't even have to leave.
So you not only are looking to bring people together and kind of celebrate the craft, but it's an also opportunity to purchase, to get your hands on something new.
It is, especially for our 50th anniversary. We really want to engage cities and provinces across the country to step up and support the playwrights in their communities, and, like, you know, go and see their show, put their shows on at Canadian theaters, buy their plays. There are so many beautiful, wonderful stories that we have in Canada, and this is our time to step up and support our artists, especially after the two and a half years, and as we continue through COVID, artists have suffered a lot, you know, and it's our time to step up and to support them and see their shows, put their shows on, read them. You know, if you're looking for that special gift coming up for the holiday season or for birthdays or anniversaries, you have that reader in your life, come on to the Canadian Play Outlet. We have a multitude of collections of different kinds of plays with a multitude of different characters. We also, through Playwrights Guild of Canada and the Canadian Play Outlet, we also support the Pledge Project, which is a project that collects women playwrights and women identifying and trans and non-binary people's plays, and for large casts, because out there, you know, schools and educational institutes are always looking for big casts. We have lists of them. And you can do Canadian work, Canadian stories. We know that there are a lot of shows going up that are, you know, written from the States or the UK, but we really want to encourage people to take a look at the Canadian playwrights and the stories that we have here.
That is the voice of Mindy Doherty Griffiths, who is Public Relations Manager at Playwrights Guild of Canada. Yeah, being Canadian and making art and then existing next to the States has always been an existential question for much of our existence as a country. So it's interesting to hear you bring that up, because you're advocating, obviously, not only for playwrights who live and produce in Canada, but also to kind of shore up
creative capital in Canada next to the States, where, you know, there's just so much more people, like the industry is bigger for sure. But how do we keep that Canadian voice out there?
By supporting theater artists. There are a lot of wonderful companies and organizations that are supporting Canadian playwrights. For example, we have a partnership with the Quebec Drama Federation for a reading series that'll be coming up at the end of August, September, and October with three incredible Indigenous playwrights. We also have our Tom Hendry Awards, where we elevate Canadian playwrights across Canada. We are the only award show that is dedicated to playwrights, Canadian playwrights. And for those who do win awards, their plays go on, you know, to be on stages across Canada and international stages. One of the awards we have, which, you know, we're really proud of, is the RBC Emerging Playwright Award for young playwrights who are up and coming. It's supported by the RBC Emerging Artist Grant. And, you know, we really try to support students and to bring new voices in. And through the awards, it's a really wonderful opportunity to just highlight some of the pieces that are out in the world.
Mindy, do you have to be a published playwright to be a member? You have some 850 people who are card-carrying members of the Playwrights Guild. But do I actually have to have something like published to join?
No, you do not. That is the wonderful thing about our membership organization. We have playwrights who are published and we have playwrights who aren't. We actually have different tiers of membership, including student membership. And there's lots of opportunities to, you know, there's lots of opportunities to be a member and to benefit from everything that we offer without actually having a published play. And when you do get that published play, we're there to continue to support you anyways.
One of the other ways that people can celebrate or see how people are celebrating is to look in on certain hashtags. Can you tell me how this celebration is continuing online?
Yes, we are so excited to be able to connect digitally around the country. We are asking people to wish us a happy 50th anniversary online. You know, share your memories of PGC. Share what that favorite Canadian play is that inspired you, maybe as a playwright or as an actor or as a director, and use the hashtag PGC50 and hashtag Year of the Playwright. We also have a really fantastic social media contest on for schools and educational institutes that if you're working on a Canadian play or you're doing a scene study with a Canadian playwright, you know, post it online, use the hashtags. We want to hear about what you're doing and your name can be put into a draw to win some plays from the Canadian Play Outlet, win one of our 50th anniversary posters that's going to come out signed by our members. So we're really encouraging everyone to get online and show your love for the playwriting community, show your love for Canadian stories.
That is Mindy Doherty Griffiths, who is Public Relations Manager at the Playwrights Guild of Canada. And we are talking about the Year of the Playwright. It's been chosen as this year, and it also ties in with the special 50th anniversary celebration of the Playwrights Guild. You referenced earlier on just how difficult the last couple of years have been for everybody, of course. And that's partly why this is the Year of the Playwright, because you're looking to boost writers. I'm curious, I've had this conversation on Upstage many a time where I've spoken to writers and said, like, was this amazing for you because you got a chance to sit down and work without distraction, or was it hard because being isolated can be a real obstacle to, you know, being creative? What have you heard from your members and the general community about people's output and how challenging or maybe bountiful it was to be writing at this time?
To be honest, we've heard a lot of mixed things. Some playwrights, you know, had the space and the emotional capacity to be able to do some more writing. They were able to sort of stop and breathe and continue on projects that they had been working on. Mm-hmm. And then we also heard about how difficult the pandemic had been. There was a huge sense of grief in shutting down theaters, projects that were underway, but also how difficult the isolation was for our members. And I think, like a lot of people, you know, in those those times of isolation, turning to connect online, turning to their artistic practice to, you know, find the inspiration to keep going. And, you know, one of the programs we actually developed out of the pandemic, came out of the pandemic, was our Craft Bites series, which allowed us then to pair up playwrights, and they could chat about, you know, what was happening with COVID. They could chat about their artistic practice. They could do some reading from their work. And a lot of them said that kind of inspired them to keep going. And for those listening in, it kind of gave them that bite of inspiration to just sort of keep going through those 2.5 years, which we were really proud and just really loved hearing. So it's definitely been a mixed bag, as it has been for everyone. But I think throughout the past 2.5 years, people have forgotten, you know, that artists went through it also. Yes, they were creating, you know, beautiful work, but it was very challenging for them, and they felt very isolated, and they went through grief of losing shows and projects, and so I think we're all building and healing from that, and that's why it's even more important to celebrate our 50th year, to celebrate our members, you know, and what they do.
Leaning into celebration and community as we come out of this. Well, congratulations to the Guild on 50 years and for unveiling the Year of the Playwright, as well as all the programming that goes along with it. It's been such a pleasure to meet you, Mindy. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been really lovely to meet you. And if your listeners are interested in finding out more of what we're doing, or our 50th anniversary, feel free to head online to playwrightsguild.ca or onto the canadianplayoutlet.com, and feel free to reach out. We're looking forward to celebrating with everyone.
That was Mindy Doherty Griffiths of the Playwrights Guild of Canada, where she is Public Relations Manager. The Guild is marking 50 years in business, and their anniversary programming is under the banner of the Year of the Playwright. Follow the hashtag PCG50 and hashtag Year of the Playwright on social media, and visit them online at playwrightsguild.ca and PGuild of Canada on Twitter and Instagram, or Playwrights Guild of Canada on Facebook. Congrats to 50 years, and here's to many more. If you are looking for things to do this Labor Day long weekend, I've got your back. I've got a couple of recommendations. There is Kristen Govers, who was my guest last week. She is presenting Awkward Ballerina, her fringe show from just this past June. It's her one-woman story about growing up with cerebral palsy. She had physical limitations as a kid, still does today, but she talks about striving to be a performer, so to be a dancer as well as a singer, and all the other kind of struggles that she had growing up. She actually quit her job as an editor during the pandemic in order to start working on this show in earnest, and she's very excited to be presenting it again in her hometown, Pierrefonds Roxboro, at the Salle Pauline Julien. You can look up Two Left Feet Productions on Facebook and Instagram. The show is called Awkward Ballerina. The Siegel Center Studio plays host to Persephone Productions' brand new show, Pool No Water, by a British playwright, follows a group of young, talented artists as they navigate early fame, and for others, maybe chasing fame but not quite achieving it. So that begins this weekend and continues through September. Persephone Productions at the Siegel Center in the studio space. We also have the FAR Festival, Festival des Arts du Ruel. They're continuing their borough by borough visit, where they're presenting basically a parade with a mix of different performances, all local acts, all free, a mix of circus, music, clowning, fun things. And Wellington in Verdun, labeled the coolest street in the world by Time Out last week, they're hosting the Marionette Plein La Rue Festival. So little performances, bigger stage performances happening up and down the Promenade Wellington in Verdun de l'Église Metro. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard two of the directors for Royal Mania coming to Théâtre aux Écuries this coming month. The festival mashes up wrestling with classical texts. Elizabeth Coulon-Lafleur directs an adaptation of Shakespeare's Richard III, and Sophia Blondin co-directs an adaptation of Greek King Agamemnon's story, reinventing him as a wrestling star. Also, director Roxane Lumed with her adaptation of Les Bonnes coming to La Chapelle September 6th, as well as Mindy Doherty Griffiths of the Playwrights Guild of Canada and on the Year of the Playwright. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters.
If your last vaccination against COVID-19 was more than 5 months ago, it's time to get another dose. Boosting your antibodies reduces the risk of getting or transmitting the virus, and booster doses help reduce the number of hospitalizations and deaths related to COVID-19. For better protection against the virus, book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine and follow the recommended vaccination schedule. Vaccination against COVID-19, a good way of extending our protection. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT, ma radio, communautaire, j'y ai trop. CKUT.ca, yo, CKUT.
90,3 FM, Montréal.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across 5 regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
Good evening and welcome to the September 1st edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show we have another lecture by Howard Zinn. It's the Howard Zinn Centenary. He was born in 1922. This is brought to you by Alternative Radio down in Boulder, Colorado. The title of tonight's lecture is Three Holy Wars. It was recorded in Boston, Massachusetts on November 11th in 2009. Howard Zinn was the professor emeritus at Boston University. He's the author of the book, A People's History of the United States, and he passed away January 27th, 2010. So here's this next lecture by Howard Zinn, series of lectures by